We're holding on Nun Hey Amud Aleph by the Mishnah. Still on the topic of things that are Mipnei Tikkun Olam. So the Gemara says, the Mishnah says, Heyed Rabbi Yochanan ben Gudgada. Rabbi Yochanan ben Gudgada gave Eidos in front of the Chachamim on the following dinim. Rabbi Yochanan ben Gudgada, we find him in Shas. He was a Levi. He lived towards the end of the second Beis Hamikdash. He was actually old enough to have been doing the avoda of the Levim in the Beis Hamikdash. The Gemara mentions in Erchin that he was one of the gatekeepers. We find him after the Churban, together with Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua. Anyway, so now he gave Eidos in front of the Chachamim on a number of dinim. The first one is about a chershes, a girl who's a deaf mute. Now in halacha, she's considered like a katan or like a shoita. She has no das. The basic idea being that since she has the same thing would be with a man, a cheresh, whatever. But since a cheresh or a chershes has no ability to communicate with others, sign language hadn't been invented yet then. Then therefore they can't possibly have normal intelligence nowadays that they are able to teach such people to communicate and sometimes even to speak. Then many of the poskim achronim say that the din is different and they are considered to have das anyway. But in terms of the Mishnah, we consider they don't have das. But now she sia via, her father married her off. So now, if her father marries her off, then it is a fully valid kiddushin, because a girl's father, until she's a naira, until she's 6 months after shteis sidus, has the ability to marry her off. So it's a fully valid marriage d'oraisa. Nevertheless, she yotze beget, that she can receive a get and dissolve the marriage. Meaning, in other words, even though Rashi explains, all the more so if her father hadn't married her off, then certainly she'd be able to, because then her kiddushin would be only dirabanan. But even if, like this, her father accepted the kiddushin and it's daraisa, even though she doesn't have das, nevertheless she's able to receive her get and go, because the fact is you don't need the woman's das in order to divorce her. Until cherem de ben gershim, you didn't need her consent. So as long as she's able to understand, in some limited way that this get means that her marriage is over and she's not living here anymore, and you're able to make a chershes understand that, then therefore the get is valid. And that was the first point that Rabbi Yochanan ben Gudgada made, and we're going to learn in the Gemara a different din that we can derive. The second din, Rabbi Yochanan ben Gudgada gave Eidos, Va'ktana bas Yisrael shenisus l'koyin shaychelus b'truma. Also, Ktana, who was not married off by her father, she's a Yisrima, so she was married off by her mother or brothers or whoever, where her marriage is only Drabanan. She nisses the Koyan, she married a Koyan, she's still able to eat Truma Drabanan, that is. The point is that even though her marriage is valid only on a Drabanan level, that's why we learned in Yevamos, she'd be able to do Miyun to dissolve that marriage. But, but nevertheless, she's still able to eat truma as the wife, truma drabanan, as the wife of a koyan, as we're going to learn in the Gemara. The point is, we would have thought that you should make a gzera, for reasons that we'll discuss in the Gemara, that she shouldn't be able to, and Rabbi Yochanan ben Gudgada is telling us that's not an issue. Tosfos actually points out, there's a Gemara in Yevamos that discusses the question, which we've touched on several times so far in our Masechta, what power do the Chachamim have when they make a gzera, when it comes to a din d'oraisa? Do they have the power to only to tell us in a case of sheval taseh, where passively you're not doing a mitzvah, and they can tell you not to do it, for example, don't blow shofar on Shabbos, or do they even have the ability to tell you kum va'aseh, to go and do something against the Torah because of the gzera that they made? So the Gemara discusses that point in Yevamos and mentions that, and mentions our Mishnah over here. And the point is, according to the opinion that they could actually be oiko dovim in Atoda, then maybe she'd even be able to eat truma daraisa. But primarily, we're talking about truma drabam. Tosfos also points out, now the Gemara itself over here is going to point out that if a katan is eating something non-kosher, we're not necessarily required to stop it. However, the Gemara in a different Gemara in Yevamos talks about that whole issue and doesn't come to a conclusion whether Beis Din is responsible to stop him. So therefore, the Gemara doesn't want to just say that he can eat, that she can eat Truma Daradais and it's fine because since she's a Ktana, then she can eat whatever she wants, and only and Beis Din has no responsibility to stop her. Besides that, also Tosfos points out another couple of things. The fact that it says that Echelos Betruma suggests that even, for example, her husband can actually give her the Truma. That you're certainly not allowed to do. Even if we say that if a Katan is eating something treif on his own, you don't have to stop him, but definitely you're not obligated, but even if you say that if he eats it on his own, you don't have to stop him, but you definitely can't give it to him. And also the Loshen is Mashma over here that she can continue eating even when she becomes a Gdola, even if they hadn't yet had relations after she became a Gdola, and therefore the marriage is not yet valid on a Daraisa level. Anyway, the point is that basically what we're saying is that she can eat Truma Dirabbanan, and Tosfos is saying according to one possibility in Yevamos, maybe even Truma Daraisa. Anyway, that's the second point Rabbi Yechon ben Gurgudah is saying.
What do you mean by Truma Dirabbanan? Could you specify this?
Like this. So Truma Dirabbanan, so you have, first of all, there's machlokas Rashi in the Rambam. What exactly is chayev into what kind of produce are chayev in truma? According to Rashi, everything except for grain, grapes, and olives is derabbanan. Those three are the only ones that are daraisa. The Rambam holds that all tree fruits are daraisa, but he would say all vegetables are derabbanan. So definitely truma of vegetables is derabbanan, and according to Rashi, also truma of fruits other than grain, grapes, and olives. Aside from that, also, for example, you have, let's say, truma from, there were certain places outside of Yisrael. We learned previously in Or Masechta about Surya, where you have to some extent, it's considered like Eretz Yisrael as far as Trumas and Maestris, but it's only on a Derabbanan level. There were even places outside of Eretz Yisrael completely, Bavel and Ammon and Moab and so forth, where Derabbanan, you're supposed to take Truma and Maestris from them. So you have various cases. You have also another example would be, let's say, produce that grows in a flower pot without a hole is Chayev only Derabbanan. So there are a number of cases where you have where produce is Chayev in Truma and Maestris, only Derabbanan. So we're saying that she'd be able to eat that. And Rabbi Yechon ben Gurgudah continues, the Mesa Baila Yosha, this Tana who was married off by her mother or her brothers, and therefore her marriage is only Dirabbanan, nevertheless, if she dies, then her husband yaushins her. We don't say, in other words, because it wasn't a fully valid marriage, then therefore her husband shouldn't yaushin her. No, we say the usual rules, the usual rules apply. Because Hefker based in Hefker, based in has the ability to take away, even though like this on Daraisa level, since she's not married, her Yerusha should have gone to her father, or not her father, he passed away, to her brothers or whatever. But nevertheless, we don't say that. Next, another thing Rabbi Yechonon ben Gurgudah says, Vala Morish Hagozel Shabnoi Bebira, about a stolen morish that was built into a building. A morish is a big beam or a big joist. So if you build it into it, so if a person steals it and builds it into a building, the only way now you have like this. In many cases, when a person steals something, depending, you need yush and shinu to shus, whatever, you need various things that will make it that he now owns that thing. And now when it comes to doing the mitzvah, the heshiva segzela, he doesn't have to return the thing itself, only the value of it. Now, in this case, he stole this morish and built it into a building. There's no change in it of the kind that would make it that on Daraisa level that he's been koneh at. Therefore, it still belongs to the other guy. And now if he wants to do truva, in principle, he should have to take it out of the building, even if it means tearing down the building. But Rabbi Yechonon is saying that the Chachamim made a takana, sheyitelus damav, the person that it was stolen from is only entitled to take the money for it. But ne takonas hashovim, this is in order to fix things up for people who want to do truva. If you have, in other words, if we were to keep to the letter of the Din Daraisa that he would have to return the beam, then a person who was in that situation would say, well, then I can't be bothered to do tshuva. I'm just going to I'm going to have to tear down my house in order to do tshuva. I can't do it. So therefore, to make it easier on him to do tshuva, the Chachamim said that he can keep the beam and just return the value of it. The the we'll see in the Gemara. It's actually machlokas b'sham b'sil. It's interesting, actually. The Medrash says that when Yonah went to the people of Nineveh and warned them, Oda boim yom Nineveh ne'pachas, that Nineveh is going to be turned over, and all of them sincerely did tshuva. So it says in the pasuk that they all the king of Nineveh over there gives orders that that they should all do tshuva. They should all do tshuva and get rid of the gezel and the chomos that they have in their possession, and everybody did. And the Medrash says it means that they did even what we're saying over here, that actually it's a Gemara in Tainus, whatever, that that says that even a person had a beam like that he had stolen from somebody else, he would actually tear down the building in order to return the actual beam. So here we're saying that the Chachamim didn't require it to do that, but we're saying that the Gemara says the people of Nineveh went beyond what was required, and they did that anyway. The Chassam Sofer has an interesting explanation about it. The Chassam Sofer says, so what's the Chiddush? I mean, the Takana that Rabbi Yechon ben Gudgada is mentioning over here is only for Jews. The people of Nineveh are Goyim, so they have nothing to do with this Takana anyway. So what's the Chiddush that they did that? According to, shouldn't they have to do that? And so the answer is that the vote is, the Pasuk says over there, that every person should do tshuva. So the Chassam Sofer explains that what happens is, before this takana, and again, the takana wouldn't really apply to the goyim of Nineveh, then if a person does pay the value of the beam, then he becomes now, he's not a gazlan anymore, because now he did pay for the beam, he becomes what's called a chamson, which means that he forced somebody to sell him and to sell him something for money, which is a different kind of thing. The Gemara elsewhere talks about that a gazlan takes something and doesn't pay for it, whereas a chamson forces the other person to sell. We're going to talk about on Omid Beis about sikriko, and is a somewhat similar kind of thing. Anyway, the point is, Chassam Sofer explains that what happened was you had the people who the beams were stolen from. Up until now, they would have wanted the actual they would want the actual beam back. And if the person says, "I'm sorry, I don't want to tear down my house, I'll give you money instead," the other guy would say, "No, I don't want that. Tear down the beam, or else tear down the house, or else." So now we're saying, when they did tshuva, those people, the victims, are now willing to accept money instead, and the other people, on the other hand, are actually volunteering and saying, you know what, we will tear down the house and give you the beam. So that way, both of them, the one group is returning the dalkam harah, where until now they were saying, no, I won't take anything other than you tearing down your building. And meanwhile, the ones who had stolen the beams were menachoma sasher b'chapehem. They did tshuva, and they actually went. They actually tore down the buildings to return the beams. So you had both. In other words, the Chassam Sofer is saying both of them were acting wrongly, and now both groups did tshuva.
You know how we learned that when a guy does something to do for their own good. So the answer to this is that, what good is a building with a beam in there if they're all going to be dying? So the only reason why at that time they did it, because they realized that if they don't do it, they're dead.
Well,
so obviously
they had an interest in doing it. Nevertheless, the Pasuk is saying that Hashem, so to speak, was impressed by their tshuva and took away the gzeira on them. And the Gemara in Tainus mentions the point. You have, even long afterwards, the Mishnah mentions over there that when you have a Tainus tzibur for rain or whatever, you use the example of the people of Nineveh as an example of how to do tshuva the right way. And so we see that. So the fact that they did the right thing, and that we can learn from them. You're right; they had an ulterior motive. The fact is also, later on, they went back to their old ways. Later on, there was another Navi Nachum who said another Nevuah about them, that they're going to be destroyed. And this time, they tackle work. But nevertheless, yeah. Anyway, getting back to the Mishnah. So in addition, there's a whole explanation from Rabbi Yosef Shalom al Yashiv on this that says that, al pi halacha, the concept of the heshiv esagzela, the mitzvah that if you stole something, you have to return it, that mitzvah only applies to Jews. We don't find that it belongs to, we don't find that it belongs to Goyim. In fact, Rashi and Tosfos elsewhere explain that, the chayiv misa, for the chayiv misa for gzela, Tosfos points out over there, it's almost like kom le b'derabimineh. Anyway, the point is, some mi'ikra din, they're potter from returning things, but nevertheless, they went lefnim mishuras adin and they did that anyway. Anyway, getting back to the Mishnah. Again, so you have this beam that was stolen, that was built into a building. The person, the original owner of the beam, is entitled only to money to compensate for it. In order to improve things for people who are doing tshuva, to make it that people who are doing tshuva are more likely to want to do tshuva, knowing that they don't have to tear down their house. Next, another thing Rabbi Yechon ben Gudgudah said, also, you have a case where an animal for a chatas was stolen, and the rabbim did not know that it was stolen. Shehi mechaperes, that such a korban is able to be mechaper for the owner, b'pnei tikkun ha-mizbeach, because of fixing things up for the mizbeach. So that last one, the Gemara is going to explain what exactly is going on over here. What exactly was the takana? There's two ways of understanding it, right? You could say that it means that if the people didn't know about it, midaraisa, it shouldn't work as a korban, but midarabanan it does. And you could say the other way around, that it means that if people do know about it, then midaraisa, it should still work, and midarabanan it's not going to. So we'll see in the Gemara two explanations of what it means. Anyway, the point is, it actually says that the last two things over here are because of takana sashavim, takana samizbeach. That's what this Mishnah is doing over here, because again, we're dealing over here with things that are mepnei tikkun olam, and these are similar kinds of things where the chachamim did it in order that society should function the way that it's supposed to, that people should be able to do tshuva and tikkun and takana samizbeach, as we'll see in the Gemara. So the Gemara starts off. Omar Rava me'edusa sh'Rabbi Yochanan ben Gudgudah. Based on Rabbi Yochanan ben Gudgudah's first edus, where he said again, you have a chershes, you have a girl who's a deaf mute who has no das, and her marriage is valid on a daraisa level because her father accepted kedushin on her behalf. Nevertheless, that the husband is able to give her a get, and it's valid, and we don't say, well, she doesn't have das, because she doesn't need das in order to receive a get. So Rava says we can learn from that. Omar la'edim. Suppose a husband says to Edim, not in the presence of his wife, Ru'u get zeshani noisim la, look at this get that I'm going to be giving her. So he writes out a get and he's ready to give it to her. And he tells the Edim, this is a get. Because of Amala, kinsi shtar choiv ze. And then he tells her, then he turns around to her and tells her, take this shtar choiv from me. Ha'reza megurashes, nevertheless, the gerushin works, even though to her, he called it a shtar choiv. And she doesn't know when she received it that it's a get. Nevertheless, it still works. Why? Me like Omer Rabbi Yechon ben Gudgudah loy be'in and daita. Didn't Rabbi Yechon ben Gudgudah in effect say that you don't need the das of the wife in order to divorce her? So even if she's a chershes, the husband is able to divorce her. Hachinami loy shna. Hachinami loy be'in and daita. The same way in this kind of situation, you don't need her das. So therefore, in other words, it's fine. As long as the Edim know that it was a get, then that's good enough. Well, the Gemara asks, he does have to tell the Edim. If he didn't tell the Edim that it's a get, if he told them also that it's a shtar choiv, and they weren't talking about iske gerushin. You also have sometimes we'll learn in kedushin in a few months, Bez Hashem, where you have in connection with gittin as well. That sometimes when the din is when they're talking about the topic, and then something is done. For example, they were talking about gittin, and then the get is handed over without saying anything, or they were talking about kedushin, and then kedushin is done. Then that works also because we assume that what's being done is a continuation of the previous conversation. But here, if they weren't talking about gerushin and he didn't tell them that it's a get, or he told them that it's something else, then it would in fact be possible. But here we're talking about that either they were talking about gerushin beforehand, or we're saying that he explicitly told the Edim, like Rava says, he explicitly told them this is a get. Anyway, so the same thing over here, then you don't need hodas, and therefore it works. Well, the Gemara asks Chita, well, then isn't that obvious? Why does Rava even need to tell us that? And the answer is Ma'u Detema, because you would think Rava's case maybe is a little bit different. Kiven de Omer Kinsi Shtar Choiv Zeh, since he says to her, take this Shtar Choiv, maybe Batule Batle, maybe by saying that, it amounts to saying that he was Mevatel the get. And we learned earlier in the Masech that the husband has the ability to be Mevatel a get, and then he can't use it anymore. So maybe, in effect, he's saying, I want this get to be considered as though it was no more than a Shtar Choiv and not a get anymore. So maybe therefore it won't work. Kamash Malan. Therefore, Rava is telling us it's not a problem. Im Issa de Batle, if he had in fact been Mevatlet, La Adim Hava Omalahu, he would have told that to the Adim. So no, he still does intend to use it for divorce. Bahai de Kamahochi, the only reason he's saying Kinsi Shtar Choibze is Mishum Kisufa is because he's embarrassed. He's embarrassed to actually face his wife and tell her, here's your get. So therefore, he pretends as though it's something else, but nevertheless, it still is a get, and it still does work once she receives it. Okay, the next din we had in the Mishnah was V'aktana Bas Yisrael. We said that you have a Ketana, who is a Bas Yisrael, where her marriage is valid only on
Derabbanan. I'm sorry, but someone think that if someone hands over a get and he says a different nusach, here's your shtar chayv, but someone think that it's not considered a good, as long as it is a get, who cares what he says,
Well, that's the point. That was the point of the Gemara. The Gemara said, we would have thought without Robert telling us that maybe by saying this is a shtar chayv, maybe he means to be mevakel as a get. The fact is that no, since he told the Eidim beforehand, this is a get and I'm giving it to her, then therefore it's good enough, even if now he pretends it's something else. That's exactly the point.
Okay, that's what maybe another thing is just doing to tease her to make her crazy.
You have it also, Whatever the case, the point is that once he told the Adim, I'm giving her, then it works.
Because he told the Adim, that's the word. Okay, thank you.
Right. Yeah. Okay, V'aktana Bas Yisrael, we said that if Ketana Bas Yisrael is married to a Kohen, she's able to eat Truma, at least Truma D'Rabbanon. Now, the Gemara says, V'ilu Chershes Loi Ochla. Now, the implication seems to be the fact that Rabbi Yechon ben Gudra mentioned only Ketana. Why didn't he mention in this connection a Chershes as well? He just mentioned a Chershes in the previous din about Yotze Beget. All of a sudden, now he's switching to a Ketana. Now, both Ketana and a Chershes have no das. But the implication that he mentions Davka Ketana in this regard is that a Chershes who's married to a Kohen is not able to eat Truma. My timer, well, why not? The problem is, Gzeira Shemayachil Cheresh B'Chershes. The problem is, what would happen if not only the wife is a Chershes, but what if the husband is also a Cheresh? Now, the fact is, we learned in Yevamos that even though a cheresh and a cheresh have no das, nevertheless, the chachamim set up a nisuin for them. The chachamim didn't want that a cheresh or a cheresh should have to remain unmarried their entire lives, so therefore they created for them a nisuin d'rabban. But the problem is, if a regular kohen is able to have his wife who's a cheresh eat truma, then what might happen is that in a similar case where both the husband... Try to keep your phone on mute, please, unless you have something to ask. Thank you. What happens is, if a cheresh is married to a cheresh, if a pikeach is married to a cheresh and she's able to eat truma, what might happen is people might confuse it with a case where the husband himself is a cheresh, and where the marriage exists only on a derabbanan level. So the Gemara asks, therefore, what's the problem? The problem in turn with that is if a cheresh is able to give his wife a cheresh to eat, then what happens is you might actually, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, you might have that, the Gemara is going to go at it in stages. So first we're saying the problem is if she's a cheresh and her husband is normal, the problem is what happened, people might confuse it with the case where both of them are cheshim, where the marriage exists only d'rabban, and therefore maybe she shouldn't be able to eat truma there. So the Gemara asks v'leichol, so what's the problem? Even if she does eat, cotton eichol nevelasu, it's an example of a cotton, in this case a cheshis, which is like a cotton, in that she lacks das, where if a cotton is eating nevelas, then Beistin is not necessarily responsible to prevent him from doing that. You're not allowed to give him isur b'yadayim, but if he's doing it on his own, then Beistin is not necessarily responsible to do something about it. His father, if anything, would be his father as a mitzvah of chinuch, so he would be the one who has to stop him. But other than that, no. So what's the problem? As long as she's a cherchus, she's potter from all mitzvahs anyway. If she does eat truma, what's the big deal? And the answer is, yeah, but the problem is that then if a cheresh is able to give his wife who's a cheresh truma, then people might confuse it with the case where he's a cheresh and she's a pikachas. and she's chayiv mitzvahs. Now, the problem is she's only married to him on a derabbanan level. So therefore, because of that, the Chachamim made across the board that any time you have a marriage involving a cheresh or a chereshes, then we're not going to allow her to eat truma, because you can have the case where he's a cheresh, she's a pikachas, she's there for chayiv mitzvahs, and for her to eat truma would be she's not considered a wife of a koyin b'daraisa, because her marriage exists only d'rabbanan, and therefore that would create problems. And the Gemara says, so what's the problem? The lechel b'truma d'rabbanon. Fine. So even that in that case, let the pikachas be able to eat truma d'rabbanon. And the answer is gzeira shema osi la'acholi b'truma d'araisa. Fine, but there's a gzeira she might come to eat from truma d'araisa. So in the case of the cotton, so Rashi explains, in the case of the katana of our Mishnah, then that's different. You can't say, you're not going to make a gzeira that if a katana is married to a gadol, she shouldn't be able to eat truma d'rabbanan, because it might be confused with the case the other way around, where she's a gdola and he's a katan, because a katan, a man, the chachamim never set up, marriage for a katan in the first place. He'll wait until he's bar mitzvah, and then he's able to get married. But as opposed to a cheresh and a chereshes, since they may live out their whole life that way as cheresh and chereshim, then the chachamim had to make a takana that they should be able to get married. And there you have the problem that people might confuse one case with another. So that's why. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Gudgoda is stressing that a katana bas yisrael shenisas the koyin is able to eat truma d'rabbanan. The reason is because there's no problem that it would be confused with the opposite case where she's a gdola and he's a katan, and therefore she's eating something that's also to her, because there's no such thing as marriage for a katan anyhow. But when it comes to a cheresh and a chereshes, they're across the board, whether both of them are chereshim or whether she's a chereshes or whether she's a pikachas, either way, the chachamim are not going to allow her to eat truma, even truma d'rabbanon, because she may end up eating truma d'araisa, and in the case where she's a pikachas, then she'd be over on iser d'araisa, because after all, her marriage exists only d'rabbanon. Okay, next, we said in the Mishnah of Alamorish HaGozel Shabnoi, the next thing we said in the Mishnah of Rabbi Yochanan ben Gudgoda's statements is that if a person stole a beam, then he doesn't have to return the beam and built it into a building. He doesn't have to he doesn't have to tear down the actual building and return the beam. All he has to do is return the value of it. So, Tonan Abonim, we learn in a Braisa. Gozel Morish Shabnoi Babira, if a person did that, he stole a beam and built it into a building. Bes Shama Eimim Makakea Kolabira Kolo Machsum Morish Labailov. Ves Shammai says you'd have to tear down the whole building and return the stolen beam to the stolen joist to its owner. Or a morish, by the way, is not just a regular beam. A morish is like a giant, like one of those giant beams or joists or whatever that like holds up the whole house or the whole floor or something. So you try to take it out, the whole thing is going to fall down. So Ves Shammai is saying, nevertheless, he still has to do that. Or Beis Hillel says, like it said in our Mishnah, that all the owner of the beam is entitled to is the value of it, Mishum Takonas Hashavim, in order to make it easier for people to do tshuva, because that way they know they don't have to tear down their house in order to do full tshuva. The next thing in the Mishnah was, Valchatas Agzula Fula. The next case was that if a stolen chatas, so we said a stolen chatas, if the rabbim don't know that it was stolen, then it's able to be mechaper mipnei takonas hashavim, mipnei tikkun hamizbeach, we said. So let's analyze that point. So Valchatas Agzula Fula, Oma Ula, Dvar Torah. What it is like this, Ula says, Mina Torah, Bein Noida, Ubein Lein Noida, Eina Mechaperas. Whether the fact that this animal was stolen, or whether it was whether the fact that it was stolen was known or not known, mina Torah it wouldn't make a difference. Ula says ena machaperes, it would not be machaper, because after all he stole it and it's not his, and you have a problem in mitzvah baba avera. Tosfos gets into a long discussion over here about exactly why Ula is saying it wouldn't work, but anyway, he's saying on a daraisa level it wouldn't work. Well, my timer yush kedi loikoni, because Ula says just yush by itself is not enough to make it that the gazlan owns it and is able to bring it as a korban. So meaning of now. That you have like this. We were saying before that a Gazlan, there are cases where he owns the thing that he stole, and now all he has to do is return the value of it. Before we said about the Morish, we have in other cases also in Bava Kamma where it talks about it. Basically, what you have to have is you need Yiyush and you need Shinui Rishus or Shinui Maisa. You need that the original owner gave up hope of getting it back, and you need that that went to another Rishus. For example, the Gazlan sold it to somebody else. Or sometimes you have Shinui Maisa, sometimes you have something, an irrevocable change that was made to the thing. Let's say, for example, the Gemara in Bava Kamma gives a whole bunch of different examples of that kind of thing, where you have an irreversible change to it. Anyway, the point is, here you don't have, here all you have is Yush. There's no Shinui Rishus, because the Gazlan himself still has the animal and wants to bring it as a korban. So Ula is saying that Yush by itself, without Shinui Rishus afterwards, is not koina as far as that he should be able to bring it as a korban. And the pasuk says that a person has to bring korban noi, his korban, so it doesn't work, says Ula, on a daraisa level. So it comes out, the way Rashi is phrasing it, it comes out that it would mean for other purposes in halacha, we might consider it to be his with Yush alone, but for korbanos, we need a higher standard. And then Tosfos again has a long discussion about that. Is that so, or are there other reasons why are there other reasons why Ula might say that it doesn't belong to him? So Ula says the takona of the chachamim was that if it's not known that it was stolen, it should be mechaper. And the reason is shelo yu koyanim atsevin. You don't want the koyanim to be sad that they ate from a korban, and it's going to turn out that the korban was no good, that the korban was not meant to have been brought, and therefore they're eating kulan ba'azara, which is aser. So we don't want that. So in other words, the takana of the chachamim was that they're going to override the din of the Torah and say, in this case, we are going to allow that korban to be brought because it was loy noy de l'rabim, and therefore the guy is actually being yotze the korban with it. Rashi adds, actually, now you have, again, that Gemara in Yevamos that we referred to several times, talks about the question, what power do the Chachamim have as far as being oiker something in a Torah? So the answer is, where it's Shev Val Tasa is different. Here it's Shev Val Tasa in the sense that we're telling the Gazlan, even though you did wrong, even though you, on a daraisa level, you shouldn't have brought this animal as a chatas, nevertheless, derabbanan, we're going to consider it acceptable because it wasn't known to the rabbim, and you should not bring another chatas. So even though on a daraisa level, he would have been obligated to bring another chatas, the chachamim can tell him not to, because that they do have the power to do. So the other Chachamim said to Ula, what do you mean? So you're explaining it so the Koyanim shouldn't be sad. The Mishnah said the reason for this takana is Tikkun HaMizbeach. How does your explanation help with Tikkun HaMizbeach? So he answers them, Amalahem, he says, Kiven to Koyanim Achsevim, because if the Koyanim were to be sad and upset about it, that they brought Cholin Bazara, then in the future they might not want to bring Korbanus at all, but Nimsa Mizbeach Batal. It's going to come out, the Mizbeach is going to be left empty because the Koyanim are kind of going to go on strike and say, we can never be sure whether an animal that's brought as a korban is honestly owned by the person, and we're afraid that we're going to be bringing chulin ba'azara. So therefore, for tikkun ha-mizbeach, in order to keep the avoda of the mizbeach functioning as it should, then the chachamim are overriding the din d'oraisa that such a korban would be possible, and allowing it to be kosher, and allowing it to actually be mechaper on the person. So that's Ula's understanding of the Mishnah. Rav Yehuda, Amar, now Rav Yehuda has the opposite understanding. He says, Dvar Torah ben noida ben loy noida mechaperes. On the contrary, says Rav Yehuda, Mina Torah doesn't matter, even if everybody knew that the animal was stolen, it still would be mechaper as long as the owner had Yush. My time of Yush kedikoni, because he says that Yush all by itself is enough for the Gazlan to be able to acquire the animal. So not just, we said before, that according to Rashi, at least, it comes out that even for other purposes, even Ula would agree that it works. It's only as far as Korbanus that Ula is saying it doesn't work. Rabbi Yehuda is saying even as far as Korbanus it works. As far as Tosfos points out at the end of their discussion, he's not concerned about mitzvah haba ba'aveira, because the fact is there is a complete kinyan over here. Anyway, so he says that. So he says it would actually work. But the Takana in the Mishnah is the other way around. Umatam omru noida in a machaperas. So why did the Chachamim say that in that that if the that if it's known that it was stolen, it's not machaper. The tikkun amizbeach is the other way around. So people don't start saying the mizbeach. It's eating things that are stolen. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, if the rabbim don't know about it, that's not going to cause people to talk like that. Therefore, we're going to leave it the way it was, daraisa, that the korban is kosher. Because as long as the owner had yush, then it's considered kosher. Because now the gazlan owns the animal. But now, if it is no de la rabim, then the chachamim are going to tell the gazlan, sorry, since it's no de la rabim, and we don't want that people should say mizbeach eichol gzeilus, you are going to have to bring another korban after all. Now, here you have the opposite problem. Tosfos says, now the Chachamim are telling you to do something that midaraisa you shouldn't have had to do. Midaraisa, he was yotze with this korban, says Rabbi Yehuda, and midrabanan were telling him that he has to bring another korban. So in fact, Tosfos says, here we have to be talking about where it was found out, where it became publicly known that it was stolen before the Zrikas had died. So the kapara has not happened yet. Therefore, the chachamim can say that korban is not mechaper on him. But if they only found out about it after Zrikas Adam, then yeah, it's true that says Tosfos, the chachamim are not going to be able to tell him to bring another korban, because the chachamim can't tell him to actually go and do something which is also daraisa, namely to bring cholin into the azar. Okay, so we have two explanations. So again, to recap, Ula is saying that midaraisa this korban shouldn't have worked at all, but midrabanan there are cases where it does work, so that we don't have the kohenim don't feel that every time they have to always second guess themselves and they're going to be afraid to do the avoda. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, the other way around, midaraisa would always be kosher, but midrabanan when it's known, we don't want people to start talking to say that the mizbeach is eating zeus. So the Gemara says, "Bishleima la'ula, hainu de katani chatas." Well, according to Ula, it's easy to understand then why the Mishnah is mentioning the chatas, because the kohenim eat from it. In other words, according to Ula, there'd be no reason to mention the Mishnah couldn't mention an ola, because by an ola that wouldn't be relevant. The kohenim are not going to be so upset when they're sitting and eating it and wondering whether maybe they're eating cholin ba'azara, because an ola is burnt on the mizbeach anyhow. Ela l'Rabbi Yehuda. My iria chatas, but according to Rabbi Yehuda, why mention specifically a chatas? I feel a oila nami. According to Rabbi Yehuda's din would apply equally well to an oila. I feel a oila nami, and the answer is loy b'bayi kamar. According to Rabbi Yehuda, when the Mishnah mentions a chatas, it's saying a chidush. Needless to say that this din would apply to an ola, the whole thing is burnt on the mizbeach. So definitely you're going to have, if the animal is stolen and everybody knows about it, that people are going to say mizbeach eichol gzeilus. El afilu chatas nami, but even a chatas as well. Dechela v'dam hu desolik. After all, from a chatas, not very much goes on the mizbeach. Only the fat and the blood of it goes on the mizbeach. So legabim mizbeach, who the solik legabim mizbeach. The idach koinim achlivei. The rest the koinim eat. So maybe even if it's known that the animal is stolen, it's not so bad. People are not going to say mizbeach uchol gzeilus because of that small amount that goes on the mizbeach. Nevertheless, Rabbi Yehuda is saying they still make the gzeira because we don't want people to say mizbeach uchol gzeilus, and therefore that applies even to a chatas. So according to Ula, in other words, the Mishnah is talking about only a chatas or other such korbanos that are eaten by the kohenim, whereas according to Rabbi Yehuda, the Mishnah is saying even a chatas, this din applies, and how much more so an ola. Okay, the Gemara says Tanan. Let's look at the Mishnah again and see which opinion Ula or Rabbi Yehuda it fits with better. The Mishnah had said, "Al chatas agzula shalanoid l'rabim," that the chatas was stolen and it's not known to the rabbim. Shehi mechaperes. So we're saying that korban is mechaper mipnei tikkun hamizbeach because of tikkun hamizbeach. Now it sounds like the mipnei tikkun hamizbeach is saying why it's mechaper. So b'shleimel ula, so we're calling nicha. So according to ula, it's easy enough to understand because he's saying if it weren't for this takana, the kohenim would always be worrying and second guessing themselves and might not do the avoda. So matnei tikkun hamizbeach, in order to allow the avoda in the beis hamikdash to continue functioning, then therefore the chachamim in a certain case said that this animal, that this korban can be mechaper for the person. The Mishnah should say the other way around. According to him, the takana is that in certain cases it doesn't work. So the Mishnah should be saying that the Chacham made a takana that where noyda l'rabim, that where it is known to the public, that einam chaperes mepnei tikkun hamizbeach. Instead, the Mishnah is phrasing it the other way around. So the more answers. So that's exactly what the Mishnah means, according to Rabbi Yehuda. It means it's telling us the fact that if it's not known that it is mechaper, loy noida mechaperes, which implies noida ain't mechaperes. The implication is the other way around. If it is known that it's stolen, that it's not mechaper, and the reason is mepei tikkun hamizbeach, because we don't want people to say mizbeach uchum zelus. So Rabbi Yehuda can answer that's what the Mishnah means. The point, the takana of the Mishnah is not so much what it explicitly says, but what's implied by the Mishnah, namely that if it is no de la rabbim, it doesn't work, and the reason is mepei tikkun hamizbeach. Okay, the Gemara says Masiv Rava. So Rava points out a contradiction against Ula. A Mishnah says in Baba Kama, gona vihikdish, if a person stole an animal and was makdish it as a korban, afterwards he shechted or stole the animal. Now we know the Torah tells us that if a person steals an ox or a sheep, if a person steals anything, he's chayiv tashlumei kefil. And then if it's an ox or a sheep and he sells it or shechts it, then he's chayiv to pay four times for the ox or five times for the sheep. Now all of this now these dinim of tashlumei kefil and tashlumei abav hamisha do not apply to hek. So here he stole the animal. He was makdish it. Then he stole it or sold it. Mishalom tashlumei kefil. So the Mishnah says he is going to pay tashlumei kefil because when he stole it, it was cholin. But ain't a mishalom tashlumei abav chamisha. But he does not pay the tashlumei abav chamisha because by the time he did that, it belonged to hekdish, and the concept of abav chamisha does not apply to hekdish. Because the pasuk is over there says over there that it applies only to animals that belong. Well, it doesn't actually say in that particular pasuk, but whatever. The Gemara learns in Baba Kama that these concepts don't apply to hekdesh. Now, so that's the Mishnah. V'toni Allah. Now we have a braisa that explains that Mishnah. B'chutz ki haygavna onu shkoris. Now we know there's a concept of shchutei chutz. If a person shechts a korban outside the Beis Mikdash, outside the Azara, then he's chayiv kores. So a braisa says a parallel case to that Mishnah. If the person, having stolen that animal and been makdish it, if now he goes and shechts it outside the Azara, then he would be chayiv kores. So now, says Rava, v'yamet yush kedi lekoni. If you tell me, Ula, that Yush by itself is not enough for him to be koine, and on a daraisa level, such a thing could not work as a korban, and only midirabbanan it does, then koris maya vidde. Then what koris? Koris would only apply to shchutei chutz, only something that could have been brought as a korban. Same way as, for example, let's say a person takes a balmum, let's say, and shechts it outside the azar. He's not going to be chayiv kares because the rule is, in order for the person to be chayiv kares, it has to be ro'i lovi bifnim. It has to be that this korban could have been brought inside the Beis Mikdash, and instead he took it and shechted it outside. If you're telling me, Ula, that this stolen animal, daraisa, should never work as a korban because it was stolen, then why is the ganav, if he were to shecht it outside the Azara, why are we saying he'd be chayiv koris? It's not roi lovi bifnim. So the Gemara answers, Omer of Shizbi, koris midivrei. So if Shizbi answered, what we mean is he'd be getting koris midirabban. Well, achichu alei, they laughed on him. Koris midivrei mi'ika. What do you mean koris dirabban? And there's no such thing. There's koris daraisa. Sometimes we have in the Gemara, we have something that's called koris midivrei soifrim, sometimes we have koris midivrei kabbalah, where we have a case where it doesn't say in chumash that a person is chayiv koris for something, but it says in nach that he is. So fine, that means, in other words, the neviim are not creating a new halacha, they're telling us a halacha that already exists. But midirabban and achuchamim don't have the ability to make somebody be chayiv koris. So everybody laughed at Rav Shizbi for saying that. But Omer lahu Rava, but Rava says Gavra Rabba Omer Milsa, a great person, a great Talmid Chacham, Rav Shizbi, has said something. Loi tachichu Allah, don't laugh at it. You're not understanding him correctly. What he means is Koris Shaal Yudei Divrei and Bosaloi. It means yes, it's a Koris Daraisa. It comes about through what the Chachamim said. In other words, in other words, what Rav Shizbi is saying to explain that braisa is for this purpose, the Chachamim put the animal to be in his reshus, that if he's makdish it, it should actually become hektish, and that'll be chayiv koris if he shechts it outside the azara. The same way, in other words, as we're saying, according to Ula, that there's a case where the Chachamim are saying that even though daraisa it shouldn't have worked as a korban, drabbanan it will. The same way the Chachamim are saying also that, again, on the grounds of Hefker, based in Hefker, that they have the ability to penalize him and say, so now he shechted this outside the Bismikdash. He can't get away with saying, wait, it wasn't really mine, and therefore I should be potter. No, we tell him that the same Chachamim who said that it belongs to you insofar as you would have been able to bring it as a korban, as long as it wasn't Noida L'Rabim, those same Chachamim are telling you that's also in your Rashus insofar as Kores for shechting it outside the Bismikdash. It's a knas, in other words, it actually says. That's how Rashi learns. So the Tosfos says a little differently. It's not even so much a matter of a knas, because after all, the same din would apply if somebody else shechted it as well. It's just, it's part of the same din that we're saying. We said, Ula had said, the reason for the takana is shelo yukoinim at sevim. We don't want the koinim to be sad and stop doing the avoda. So by the same token, then the chachamim also added to that, that also for the same reason, shelo yukoinim at sevim, we're going to make it that it would be a fully valid korban to the extent where it is roi love bifnim, and therefore that if a person if anybody shechts it outside the azara, he'll be chayiv koris. So that's what Rav Shizbi meant by koris midivrehem, not that the Chachamim are creating a koris that didn't exist before, but the Chachamim are creating the circumstances that leads to it being considered his to the extent of the person getting koris daraisa. Okay, so Omar Rabba, so Rabba says in this connection, ho vadei kamiboyli. Now the fact is, I do have a suffix as far as the following din related to this. We're saying that the Chachamim have said, according to Ula, that the animal is considered to be the gazlan's to a certain extent, to the extent that we say that he can bring it as a korban, even though it was gzula and even though it ought not to be brought as a korban, because shelo yukoinim atzeiv. The question is, ki oikmur rabbanon, when the Chachamim say that animal is now considered in his reshus, and they make it that now he's able to be makdish it, and again that shchut echutz will therefore apply to it, and that he's able to bring it as a korban, and so on and so forth. So we're saying the Chachamim are putting it in his reshus as far as kapara. Mishas gneva or mishas hekdesha. Does that fact that it's considered to belong to him for that purpose, does that start as of when he stole it, or only as of when he was makdish it? So the my nafkamina, what's the practical difference? The difference would be the gizeh seho of vlodeh seho. As far as if in between the animal was a sheep and it grew wool and then he cut off the wool before he was makdish it, or if it had babies before he was makdish it. Once he was makdish it, then we're not talking about, you're not allowed to shear, and you're not allowed to shear an animal of hektish, and the babies of it also have kedusha. We're talking about that after he stole it, before he was makdish it, you have gizeh seho of vlodeh seho, you have the shearings or you have the babies. What would be the din? Do we say that the Chachamim are, that the Chachamim are putting it in his reshus as of when he stole it, then the gizas of Vladis have to belong to him. So then, therefore, when he eventually pays back the owner, Rashi explains, he won't be paying the value of the cow and its baby. He'll just be paying the value of a pregnant cow, which is worth a little bit less, because you always have the chance that it might not have a live birth. And the same thing, he'd be able to keep the shearings. So do we say that or do we say that not? The Chacham only put in his reshus as of right before he's makdish it, to the extent where he's able to be makdish it. So then the Gemara says, Hoda Omar Rava. So then Rava thought it over and he says, Mistaber, Mishasek Desha, it's more likely that the Chachamim make it to be his only from when he made it hektish, or right before that, Shaloya he choited nisker, because we don't want the person who did the Aveira to gain. We don't want him to gain any more than necessary. So we're making the Takana because of Takanas Mizbeach to make it possible for him to be makdish it. Again, Shaloyu Koyinim Atsevim, but the Chacham didn't want him to benefit from it in other ways, and therefore they're not going to do it in a way where he's going to end up being able to get the Gizos of Wadis. Okay. Fine. Next Mishnah says, this next Mishnah is also going to relate to a matter of Tikkun Olam. We're going to be talking about the din of Sikrikun. So a Sikrikun is, as we're going to learn, a goy, a bandit or whatever. It could be a bandit, it could be whatever. We're going to talk about different scenarios who threatens a yid that he's going to kill him. So the yid buys his life by saying, go ahead, take my field and don't kill me. So the word Sikrikun itself, Rashi says, brings from the Oruch says, comes from the word Sokarka, which means take this land, and in other words, and leave me alone. So we're talking the Sikrikun is a mafia guy or whatever who's threatening to kill a yid, and the yid buys his life at the price of his land. Others say actually there's a Greek or a Latin word for a kind of dagger called a sika, and a sikrikun therefore would be a bandit like that who walks around with a dagger and is ready to kill. Anyway, the point is, so now the Mishnah is going to talk about various stages of a takona that the Chachamim made regarding that. Again, it's all part of Tikkun Olam in order to keep things running the way they should. So the Mishnah says, Loi hoya sikrikun b'Yehuda b'haruge melcham. There was no sikrikun in Yehuda among those who were killed in the war, meaning the war of the Churban. Now, it sounds like we're saying that there were no sikrikun at that time. The Gemara is going to ask, what do you mean? That's the time when sikrikun are running amok all over the place. So the Gemara is going to explain what it means that there's no din of sikrikun at that time, the din that we're going to describe later in the Mishnah. Why are we mentioning, by the way, only Yehuda? Tosfos points out an interesting thing from the Yerushalmi. The Romans, who, as we know, are descended from Edom, they always had it in particularly for Shevet Yehuda, because we have the famous thing that Yehuda killed Esav at the Yod Chabodah Feivecha, that Yehuda killed Esav by the whole showdown by Ma'oros HaMachpelah. You have the whole story over there that we learned in Sota, that when they came to bury Yaakov, Esav was coming and claiming, I own a half share in the Ma'oros HaMachpelah, and I'm not letting you bury Yaakov over there. And they had to send Naphtali to run back to Mitzrayim to get the shtar. Meanwhile, it says over there that Chushim ben Don was deaf, and he didn't understand fully what was going on. But he sees that Uncle Esav is standing over there and preventing Zaydi Yaakov from being buried. So he went and knocked down Esav. But the Medrash goes on the Medrash doesn't say, but Tosfos says, based on the Yerushalmi, the implication is that Chushim only knocked him down, but then Yehuda finished him off. So now, ever since then, the descendants of Esav, and therefore eventually the Romans, had it in particularly for Shevet Yehuda. So now, therefore, the Mishnah is stressing over here, Yehuda, that in Yehuda, where particularly they're running around to kill, then therefore the din of Sikrikun didn't apply at that time. The din that we're going to describe later in the Mishnah of what you do in terms of those fields that were extorted and stolen from Jews, in terms of if another Yid wants to buy it from the Gazlan. Anyway, Meharuga Mechama Ve'elach Yesh Basikrikun. After the time when people were being killed during that war, then there is Sikrikun. So again, it almost sounds like there were no Sikrikun at the time of Harugi Mohammed, and the concept of Sikrikun only came into existence after that. And the Gemara said that's backwards. The Sikrikun were running around and then killing people during the time of the Churban. It means the din of Sikrikun, as we'll say. So what does this mean? Ketzad, lokach misikrikun. So what happens? You had Reuven owned a field. A sikrikun went and forced Reuven to give him the field under the threat that he's going to kill Reuven. Now, Shimon comes and he wants to buy that field. Lokach misikrikun. So Shimon comes and buys the field from that sikrikun and pays him money for it. Then he also goes to Reuven and says, I want to get full title to it. I don't want you, Reuven, to later on come and claim that this field belongs to you, so here I'm going to pay you off as well. We say mekochei bottle, the sale is bottle, because we say that when Reuven gave him money, either it was out of fear, it was out of fear of the Sikrikun, because he knows if he doesn't ratify what the Sikrikun did, then the guy is still going to come back and kill him, or Rashi says it might even be one of those cases where the Gemara calls it Asheni Noyach Li Harishin Kosher Hemenu, that the Reuven figures, look, as long as the Sikrikun owns the property, as long as the Sikrikun has possession of the property, I'm never going to be able to do anything against him because he's protected by the powerful Goyim that he's in cahoots with. But as long once Shimon buys it, then I'll be able to go and then I'll be able to go take Shimon to Beis Din and get it back. So therefore, Reuven has not fully given up hope of getting that land back, and therefore Shimon's sale of it is bottled. But if he did the other way around, if Shimon first went to Reuven and paid him for it, and then he went to the Sikrikun and bought it from him, then the sale is valid, because then there's no reason to be concerned. Reuven obviously didn't do it out of fear of the Sikrikun, because the Sikrikun wasn't involved in selling the field yet when Shimon came to him. It's also not that he's saying Hasheni Koyach Noyach Li Arishin Kosher Hemenu, because again, he doesn't even know if Shimon is going to be successful in getting it from the Sikrikun. So in that case, the sale is valid. So that's the original din of Sikrikun. So again, we're saying that whole din that the Mishnah is saying did not apply at the time of Harugi Mochama during the war of the Churban and for a period of time after that. Similarly, lokach mina ish v'chos of a lokach mina isha. Similarly, if a husband is selling property of a property that was supposed to be reserved to pay off the wife's ksuba, if he buys it from the husband, and then from the wife, v'chos of a lokach mina isha, mekhe bottle, then the sale is bottle, because then she can say nachas ruach hasisi labayli. She can say I'm only doing it in order to make my husband feel good. He already sold it, so therefore I'm going along with it, but not that she really wanted to sell it. In other words, Rashi brings from a Gemara elsewhere where if she doesn't agree to it, then the husband is, hey, what? You don't want me to sell it? What is it? Because you're looking forward to soon I'm going to be divorcing you, or soon I'm going to be dying and you're going to get that field, and it's going to cause friction between them. So therefore, she has the right to say, Nachas ruach hasisi labayli, but I didn't really sincerely agree to the sale. Rashi points out, by the way, that it would apply. So we're talking about, again, it could be a field that was reserved specifically for Huxuba to be paid from. It can also mean one which that's part of Nichzei Tzoyin Barzel, where it's written into the Ksuba and the husband took achrayus for it. And Rashi says Kol Shekein and other nechosim this din would apply to. So Mekochei Botur, because she can say Nachas Ruach Hasisa LeBayli. But the other way around, mina isha v'chaz of a lokach mina ish. But if he buys from the wife and then from the husband, mikoche kayim, then the sale is valid, because now she can't say nachas ruach hasisa labayli, because the husband wasn't even yet involved. Okay, so this the Mishnah says zu Mishnah rishon. This that we said the din of Sikrikun was the original Mishnah. So the original din was, in short, that after Harugi Mochama, after things have calmed down, then the din of Sikrikun goes into effect. Now, if at that point a goy forces a yid to give him his field, or else he's going to kill the yid, and then later on, if another yid goes and buys the field from the Sikrikun, he has to first go and arrange things with the original balabos before he goes and starts talking to the Sikrikun. Continues the Mishnah, based in Shalachreim Omru, a later based in said, the Tanoim saw that there's a problem over here. Now that means that Jews are not willing to buy from the Sikrikun at all. They're going to say, in that case, why should I even bother? Why should I bother trying to buy from the Sikrikun? Even if I do, and later on I go to Reuven, he's still going to protest, and I'm not going to end up with the field. So the later based in, so they said, So they said, Halakeach Misikrikun, Noisim Labailim Revia, the sale will be valid if he buys directly from the Sikrikun, but he has to give the owner, the original owner, Reuven, he has to give him one quarter. And we're going to discuss in the Gemara, Adafnun Ches, what exactly does that mean? He has to compensate the original Balabas somehow with a quarter. We're going to see a quarter of the field, a quarter of the value. We'll talk about that in the Gemara, Adafnun Ches. Anyway, continues the Mishnah, Emasai. Now, when is that talking about? Bizman Shain Biyodam Likaf. Only when the original owner does not have enough money or enough resources to be able to buy back the land from the Sikrikun. Avo Yesh Biyodam Likaf. But if the original owner has the ability to buy, who Hain Kodim Lafaladam, then they come first. Meaning, if Shimon comes to buy the property from the Sikrikun and Reuven himself has enough money to buy the property back, his own property, then he has first rights, and he can tell Shimon, I'm like the Bar Metzra, I have greater rights on this than you. And even you buy it from the Sikh record, you're only acting as my shliach, and I'm entitled to give you money and take my field back. Continues the Mishnah. Rebbe Hoshe based in Venimnu. Rebbe set up a based in, and they voted on changing the din yet again. Shim shasib of ne sikrikun shnei masachodesh, that if that field remained in the possession of the sikrikun for 12 months, then whoever is first to buy it will be zoicha in it, because here you have fakert. If you say that the owner is always going to have first rights, then people are not going to want to bother. Why should I bother buying it from the sikrikun and bringing it back into Jewish hands, when all I'm going to end up anyway is that I just went to Tircha on behalf of Reuven and I don't get to keep the field myself? So Rebbe said, if the sikrikun has held on to the field for 12 months, then anybody who buys it is zoicha in it, and we don't apply Reuven's dinner by metzer anymore. I will know some by the Rebbe, but the previous takana is still in effect. He would still have to pay Reuven his one quarter, as we're going to learn in the Gemara. So there were three different stages, in other words, in this din. So there were four different stages, really, in this din of Sikarikun. You had a time when the din of Sikarikun Bechlal didn't apply yet, as we're going to say in the Gemara. You had a time when it started applying after things calmed down. And then within that, you have three different stages of Takonis of the Chachamim. The first one saying that you have to, that you can't just go buy directly from the Sikrikun. You have to go talk to the Balabas first. The second one saying that you could buy directly from the Sikrikun without talking to the Balabas first, but you have to compensate him with Revia. But also that if he had, but at that point, the din still was that if the original Balabas has the ability to buy it back, then he has first rights. And Rebbe's Takana, which is that you don't even need that. Once it's 12 months by the Sikrikun, then we don't say by Metzer anymore. And then we say the buyer Shimon is allowed to keep it as long as he gives Reuven his 25%. So the Gemara says, what do you mean when the Mishnah is saying there was no Sikrikun in Yehuda during Harugi Melchama? There was Sikrikun afterwards. So what do you mean? It sounds like the Mishnah is saying that there were no Sikrikun at the time of Haruge Mochama. The Goyim were not threatening Jews and killing them and taking their money. What, did that kind of thing only start after Haruge Mochama? That's backwards. So the Rabbi Yehuda says it means the Mishnah is saying during the time of Haruge Mochama, the din of Sikrikun did not apply. Meaning, namely, Rab Asi explains there were three different gzeiros that the Goyim made at the time of the Churban at three different times. Gzeiro kamay, so the first one, while the war was going on, kol deloy kotil liktalu. Any Goy who does not kill a Yid himself is going to be executed. Mitziosa, then there was a second stage where maybe the war is over, but nevertheless, Jewish blood is still cheap. Anybody who kills a Jew, the second law was that any guy who kills a Jew will have to pay a fine of 4 zuz. But 4 zuz is like next to nothing. It's like, you know, nowadays in English we say a dollar. So 4 zuz would be like that. It would be like a very nominal sum. Tosfos Rid actually says the other way around. It means we'll pay him 4 zuz. So they're not saying that if you don't kill a Yid, you'll be killed, but they're saying it's still worth something to us. We'll give you 4 zuz for your trouble. Basraisa, finally came the law. Eventually, once things calm down, called a cop to lick to luhu, any guy who kills a Jew himself will be killed. So Hilkoch, so therefore, so it was Kamaiso Mitziasa during the first and the second stages, given to Katli, since the Goyim are killing Jews right and left, Agav Einse Gomer Omakni. So therefore, the Yid, that he feels there's a case of onus, he has no choice, so therefore he's fully Makna the Karka to the Goy, the land to the Goy, and therefore later on when a Yid buys it from the Goy, it's considered there was Yish, and therefore therefore it's a fully valid sale, and the whole din of Sikrikun that was saying that he would have to go to the Balabayas and get permission from him, etc., wouldn't apply. Basraisa, but when it came to the last stage, once Jews have rights again under Roman law, and then the Romans are saying that if a goy kills a Yid, then he'll be killed. So you still have Sikrikun going around and trying to harass Jews. But nevertheless, Amri, the Yid, is going to say to himself, "Ka'idna lishkol, fine, right now I have no choice. The guy's standing against me with a weapon, so I have no choice but to give him my field. Lamacha to vayna lebedina, but pretty soon I'll be able to take him to the goyish courts and get my land back, because even under goyish law at this point, they have no right to be doing this, and therefore he's never miyayish on the field. field, and therefore that's when the din of sikrikun kicks in, that therefore now if another yid goes and buys it from him, then he needs to check with the balabas first and the various stages that we said in the Mishnah.